checking to see if the equipment is working correctly. I'm in the office of Mr. Leonard Arnold at Triton High School in Irwin, North Carolina. Today's date is January 18th, 1991. Mr. Arnold, I'd like for you to introduce yourself and say that you know this interview is being recorded.
My name is Leonard Arnold. I am principal of Triton High School, and I am aware that the interview is being recorded, and Mrs. Wells has my permission to use it in any manner that she would see fit.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you responded to the questionnaire and sent it back. As I stated in the letter, I'm doing some research, which is a part of my doctoral requirements, doing a comparative study of black, the role perceptions of black high school principals. Back in 1964, there were over 200 black high school principals. When I wrote last year to the State Department to ask them for a list of black high school principals, they sent me a list of 41. And I later learned that of that 41, some of them were principals of alternative schools and not traditional high schools. So you all are a few compared to the number of districts we have in the state of North Carolina and the high schools that we have. I'd like for you to share some things about the principalship with me. These tapes will be used later on for research, and they'll be archived at the university in the Southern Collection at Wilson Library on campus of Chapel Hill. I'd like for you to tell me something about yourself and how you became a high school principal.
Well, Ms. Wells, I am a native of the area. As a matter of fact, if you look out the window, you'll see my elementary school. I grew up in this area, as a matter of fact, as a Boy Scout camped out on this very spot the school is located on. I received my high school education at what was then Harnett High School in Dunn, North Carolina. It no longer existed as a high school. It now serves grades K-4. From there, I attended Fayetteville State University, majoring in mathematics with a minor in health and physical education. I took my first job here in Harnett County in the western part of the county at what was then Johnsonville High School. Worked there 2 years and went from Johnsonville High School to Benhaven High School in 1968. At the time, the high schools in Harnett County were integrated. In both situations, I taught mathematics. In 1971, I came to Dunn High School as a part-time math teacher and a part-time assistant principal. And after 1 year, I moved into a full-time assistant principalship, dealing with those things commonly associated with the assistant principalship, attendance, discipline, just a number of things traditionally associated with the assistant principalship. After some years at Dunn High School, I guess it was in 1975, I moved into central office to direct what was then called the ESA program. I directed that program for 1 year and then returned to Dunn, where I was appointed principal of Harnett Middle School. Harnett Middle School was a school of 1,200 students in grades 4 through 8. I remained at Harnett Middle School until 1985, when this school, Triton High School, was being built. And upon its completion, I moved here as principal of Triton High School. I've been here for 6 years. In terms of the question of how I got here, I really don't know. Other than one morning, the superintendent called me and asked me to be in his office in 30 minutes, and I told him I couldn't be. And he said, "We'll be here in 45. Not knowing what was on his mind, I made my way to central office, and as I walked in the door, he said, "Len, would you like to be principal of Triton High School?" And I said, "Mr. Gray, I've never thought about it." And he said, "Well, you don't have time to think. I'm moving fast this morning. I need to know whether or not you're interested in being principal of Triton High School." And I said to him, "Mr. Gray, I can't answer that question. I haven't thought about it and never dreamed that I would even be asked a question, so I just can't answer that question." And he said, "What do you need to do in order to answer that question?" I said, "There are some people I need to talk to." And he said, "Who are they?" And I said, "My mother, my dad, and my grandmother, my son, my wife, my secretary, and my guidance counselor." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, you have until 2:30. So I spent the rest of the day talking to those people. And each one of them said to me, "You need to take the opportunity." And at 2:30, I called him. I well remember the conversation. I said, "Mr. Gray, I don't know what the answer to your question is. The only thing I can say is that wherever I'm needed in the system, wherever you place me, I'll do the best I can." And he thanked me and reminded me that he had not promised me a job. He merely was inquiring and told me that at some point in the future, he'd let me know what the decision was. Well, the future was that night at 11:45. He called me and said, "Lynn, you're now principal of Triton High School. Have a good day." And that was it.
Had the board met between your...
The board met that night.
That night, I see.
The board met that night. Oh. And that's how I got here. Mm-hmm. I've been here ever since and enjoyed every minute of it.
Good. Do you have educators in your family? Do you come from a line of educators?
There are some. Not in my... I have cousins who are educators, but in terms of my primary family, no. I came from a family that was a farm family. In terms of mother and father, very little education. And while they didn't have a lot of education, they believed in education. As a matter of fact, I have three brothers and sisters. Excuse me, I have one brother and two sisters. Neither one of which ever missed a day of school in their life.
Mm.
I'm the only one who couldn't get perfect attendance. But for all three of them, they went to school every day in their life. And I mention that really to emphasize how important they viewed education. I think for 11 years I went to school 179 days, and for one of the 12 years I went to school 178 days. I never could get 180 days, but they did treasure education. In our household, it was clearly understood that even though we had a television, I think we got a television when I was 6 years old, or maybe seven, it couldn't be turned on until all homework was done. And all chores were done. So while my mother and father were modestly educated, I would say, it was very important to them that we received all we could get.
Mm-hmm. Did your other sisters and brothers go on to college?
Yes. I have one sister who is a guidance counselor here. I have a brother who is in industrial technology with Kelly Springfield. I have another sister who is involved in computer science in the western part of the state.
Very good. Now I want you to tell me something about Triton High School, the number of students, staff members, some of the history of the school.
Sure. Triton High School is a school situated here in rural eastern North Carolina that represents the consolidation of three previous high schools: Dunn High School, Irwin High School, and Coates High School. Dunn High School had a student body of about 900. Irwin had a student body of about 400, and Coates had a student body of about 250 or 300 in terms of the high school student body. We are a school of 1,400 pupils and 102 professional staff members. We also have 27 support staff persons, including janitorial and lunchroom and cafeteria workers. This school opened in the fall of 1985. We are now in our sixth year. In terms of the makeup of the student body, we are 35% minority, 65% white. Let's say 64% white and 1% Indian. The faculty is fairly reflective of that percentage. Economically, socioeconomically, I would describe our student body as being a cross-section typical of that found in eastern North Carolina. We have students who are extremely poor, and we have students who are extremely wealthy. We have students who live in housing that's barely adequate, And we have students living in $400,000 homes. So the range is fairly clear in terms of the socioeconomics of the student. One of the things I'm proud of in looking at the socioeconomics of Triton High School is the interpersonal dynamics of the student body. Once these students arrive in this building, they are not black kids, white kids, rich kids, poor kids. In any group of students, if you were to study the makeup of the student body, be it socially or however else they may cluster, you're subject to find students well integrated without regard to their socioeconomic standing or without regard to their race. It's an excellent student body of students. I tell them and I tell others, I don't believe there's a better student body anywhere to be found in the state. Our faculty is basically a faculty of either natives of the area or people who have been in this area long enough that they are now rooted in the area. There's very little turnover in this school. As a matter of fact, in the 6 years that we've been here, I have hired less than 10 people. So I think that says something about the local nature of the staff, but it also, I think, says something about the fact that the staff is satisfied to be a part of Triton High School. I'm pleased to say that we actually have a waiting list of people from across the county wanting to become a part of our staff. So that's something we feel good about. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Very good. Now I'm going to ask you something about the responsibilities that you have, and I'll give you different areas so you can tell me how you deal with them.
Before you start, can you cut that just a second? Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you deal with supervision of personnel and selection of teachers.
Let me talk about supervision and then we'll talk about selection. And as I've said, I've had a few occasions to actually select teachers. But supervision of personnel. In our structure, we have four assistant principals. And I have designated one of those assistant principals to operate in a role that more accurately could be defined as that of the instructional leader, directive instruction, if you will. It is her responsibility, Mrs. Hasty, to do direct supervision, direct observation, and to deal with teachers in terms of curriculum development and instructionally related matters. Of course, I take an active role in that process, but she is, if you will, the first line supervisor. In a school this big, with all of the types of responsibilities and all of the types of things you have to deal with, I felt that it was important that I identify a competent person to deal directly with instruction on a day-to-day matter. And while Mrs. Hasty is identified as an assistant principal, she does not deal with those matters normally associated with the assistant principalship. She exclusively deals with the instructional program and the curriculum needs. And that is my direct link to the instructional program within the school. Now, not only do I take an active part, but we debrief, if you will, at least twice a week. We try to do it daily. I would say we average three times a week, but we must do it twice a week. At these debriefings, Mrs. Hasty, along with the other assistant principals and I, after school, sit down and just discuss all things that are happening, so that not only will the person directly responsible for an area know what's going on, but the other administrators also will know what's going on. In terms of the selection process of teachers, we have a final voice in deciding who comes to our local campus as a teacher. However, we have some understandings and some procedures that starts with the personnel director. A new applicant will file a formal application with the personnel director in Lillington, in central office, And from there, we'll schedule an appointment with the local principal if, in fact, there is a vacancy. And if that person's certification would make him or her a candidate for that position. At that point, once the interview has been scheduled to the convenience of both, the local principal assumes the responsibility. And let me back up, because the personnel director, first of all, interviews the candidate, and then that candidate has an interview with the local school principal. Mm-hmm. At that time, the local school principal, depending on his style of interview, discusses with the applicant all possible considerations related to the position, whether or not their extracurricular duties, the breadth of that person's training and experience, all matters that could possibly enter into a decision as to whether or not that candidate would be the appropriate person or the best, the most appropriate person, let us say, to fill the position. Once that decision is made, a report is made to the personnel director, and if it is a recommendation that this person will be employed, then the personnel director will take care of the mechanics of employment, and that person begins work at a mutually agreed upon date.
Okay. See. Now, when it comes to the observing and doing the evaluation.
Okay. The director of instruction is the primary formal observer. Mm-hmm. Okay. In addition to her formal observations, the principal, in this case, makes informal observations, some which are written up, some which are not, but in almost all cases, unannounced ones. Once the evaluation, the observation procedure has been completed, and I might also add, we're one of the pilot units, therefore we also have peer evaluators. Mm-hmm. Once all of that raw material has been assembled, the director of instruction and I usually meet on a Saturday morning, and we review, or on a series of Saturday mornings, and we review every teacher's file, and using all of the information, all of the raw material that has been pulled together for that file, and with the input of the formal observer, the assistant principal, the information that the principal has been able to glean through his informal observations and through his day-to-day observations, then we do the formal checklist, the formal evaluation tool, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
After that has been done, we, the assistant principal and I, schedule a conference with the teacher being evaluated, go over with him or her the items that we have checked, mm-hmm. and allow that teacher to engage in whatever discussion that he or she might want to engage in. Inform them that they have a right to respond to the evaluation, and ask that they sign it. And that's basically the procedure. So I guess in summary, the evaluation is a cumulative a summary of the director of instruction's input, the peer evaluator's input, as well as the principal's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Curriculum and instruction, it seems like you've kind of delegated that already. But how much input do you have?
Oh, it sounds as though I've delegated, and I guess maybe one of the criticisms that I would make of myself as an administrator, and I don't know that it's a criticism, I think it's right, is that even though I delegate and respect the job that those persons who've been delegated responsibilities do, and even though I allow them to do those jobs, I find that it's important to me that I have hands-on relationships with all persons involved in a particular task. As an example, in the formal observations, you know that we have formal and, well, announced and unannounced. Yes. Let's call it what it is, announced and unannounced. In the announced evaluation, observations, you know you have a post-conference, then you have your observation, and you have
a pre-conference,
a
observation
and then post-conference. Your post. Okay, so we'll get it right. I try to make myself available in as many of the pre-conferences as possible. I try to make myself available in practically all of the post-conferences, even though I may not have actually gone in the classroom and involved myself in the evaluation. It is important to me that I sit on the post-conferences particularly because I want to hear two things. I want to hear what the observer saw, and I want to hear the teacher's response. That's important to me, which means that in March, when I sit down to read these documents and review them, I can relate not only to what I'm seeing at the moment, but I can relate to the exchange that those two people had as this was being discussed at that time. For example, if an observer notices some serious problems, it is important to me that I know and participate in deciding what plan of improvement is worked out. It is important for me to know how the teacher responds to that plan of improvement. And it's also important to me later on to find out how well that plan is being executed. So I would not say that by delegating basic responsibilities, I move myself away from the process. I take pride in the fact, and sometimes it gets to me because it does generate additional work. But I like to be involved in as much of what's going on as possible. Take the other assistant principals, for example, who involve themselves in discipline and attendance and those type things. I work right with them. If a student has a problem today that's a serious disciplinary problem, before I go home this evening, I know all the details of it. Possibly have even talked to the teacher and to the student, even though another assistant principal may have that as his primary responsibility. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I see. Now, when it comes to curriculum changes, do you work closely with your department?
Okay, curriculum changes. In considerations that would come under this category, not only does the principal and the director of instruction involve themselves in that process, but department heads, guidance, and through their department heads, all staff members become involved. For example, if we are concerned with a change in the science department, the procedure would be that the department head would meet with science teachers, and they would come to some conclusions or some consensus as to what they would like to see happen and reasons for it. That assistant principal then will meet with me and the director of instruction, and in most cases, a supervisor from the central office, to discuss the pros and cons of the proposed change. Once we have heard various inputs, and once we have made preliminary decisions, then that process reverses itself. The department head carries our response back to his or her teachers. They discuss it, and then we try to gel it all together to come up with some considerations. In many cases, students are involved in that process, either through active discussion or through surveys. Okay? Guidance is involved for the obvious reasons. They have their perspective in terms of how all these things fit into the total schedule, as well as the 22 units required by the local system, or the 20 units required by the state. So it becomes really a kind of mushroomed mm-hmm. type environment. Mm-hmm. Very seldom is a decision made in this office, Miss Wells.
Mm-hmm.
Very seldom. most of the decisions are affirmed in this office, but most of the decisions are made by various faculty committees.
How do you deal with the discipline?
Well, let me first of all tell you just a word about my philosophy. I believe that there are two major avenues in dealing with the correction of behavior. And I don't know how accurately they are defined by dictionary, but for the sake of conversation with my staff and with my students, I believe in a disciplinary approach, which is a guidance or counseling approach for most problems. I also believe in another avenue that I would call just raw punishment. And I think there's a need for both. Our preference here is the disciplinary approach. And I define discipline as a change in behavior. Very seldom does a student get into problems that require just raw punishment. Occasionally, for example, if you go out there and slap somebody, you're going to be punished. But we spend far more time talking with students and counseling and directing students than we do punishing students. I don't think a student has ever been punished in this office who has not, first of all, understood and indicated that he or she might have understood by admitting that what we're dealing with was wrong. That's first. Students know it. But sometimes it takes a week to get to final resolution because a problem has not been solved until a student, first of all, understands why what we are dealing with is wrong. Once we do that, we try to establish some understandings as to what would have been the preferred right way of dealing with the problem. Our third step is to try to arrive at a commitment for the future. And then, once we've done those things, we analyze whether or not there's a need for some punishment. For example, you just heard me ask one of the assistant principals to take a student, to suspend the student. Now, that student has had probably 5 conferences with me and the assistant principals. Last week, I had that student's mother in. Once again, trying to get a commitment, okay? And here we are less than a week dealing with the same problems. Again, this is a boy who transferred in and just will not go to class. Mm-hmm. Well, we're sending him home. But while he has a 5-day suspension on record, he is in control of how long he will be home. He could get back in school tomorrow if he wants to. Okay, what he knows is this. He must go home and discuss the fact that I am now suspended from school with his mother. And once he decides that he's going to follow the rules of the school, all he has to do is pick up the phone and call me and say, "Mr. Allen, I'm ready to go back to school." And if he can persuade me that he is serious, then I'll tell him, "Get your books and come on back over here." Okay? Since I've been in this school, we have had to expel for the rest of the year 2 students. We probably have suspended for, say, 3-day periods, probably 20 students this year. We have had four fights, I believe, in fact, in this school this year. And on a typical day, what you'll see in terms of student behavior is what you'll see if you get up and walk around campus right now. We appeal to students to be good because it's the right thing to do. And we say to them, you're young adults, and we hold these expectations. And I'm proud of the fact that these kids live up to them for the most part. Now, this is not a perfect school. I've never seen one. But discipline just is not a problem in this school. It's just not a problem in this school. Probably, if I wanted to talk about the most serious concerns I have in terms of discipline, it would be those few individuals who are constantly tardy to class, or that 7 or 8 students who manage to cut a class on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the students in this school behave probably more like you would expect to find in a community college, that level of maturity, mm-hmm. than you would typically expect to find in a high school, and that's an honest fact. One of the ways, Ms.